Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, changemakers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce that farmers can't sell, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Jostein Solheim became the CEO of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream on Free Cone Day in May 2010. It was a decade after the company was purchased by Unilever, and Solheim was charged with building on the company's history of activism. During his tenure, Ben & Jerry's became a certified B Corporation, signed an agreement with Migrant Justice called Milk with Dignity to protect migrant dairy workers, and reduced chemical use within the company's supply chain. It also advocated for climate justice and the Paris Climate Agreement. The company is now supporting the Poor People's Campaign, which was started by Reverend Martin Luther King more than 50 years ago. Jostein Solheim has worked for Unilever for more than 25 years. He's also overseen the international expansion of Ben & Jerry's, taking it from 18 to 35 countries. This summer, Jostein Solheim stepped down as the CEO to become the head of food and beverage in North America for Unilever. Jostein, welcome back to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Take me back to 2010 when you were offered the job as head of Ben & Jerry's. It occurs to me this is not necessarily an easy job. Your name is neither Ben nor Jerry, yet they cast a long shadow on this company. They don't run it, but their values do. And you're brought in as the supposed boss. What were your expectations?
That's an excellent question. As Jerry actually said in my leaving speech this week, he said, you know, CEOs come and go, but founders stay. And it's very true. You know, I actually came here with, a good dose of skepticism whether this was really true and really feasible to do. Right? Could we really live these values, act on them, and create systemic and structural change? The acquisition agreement, the governance model with the board of directors, and the cheerleading and challenges that the founders pose with, you know, continued involvement in terms of values and drive and forward thinking. But I'm amazed at what we've achieved. And I'm also amazed, and I think everybody that's been involved have been positively surprised by how far Unilever is willing to lean in under the leadership of Paul Polman, and how Ben & Jerry's has, yes, done many of the things you mentioned in your opening here as a company, but also our enormous influence on Unilever.
Talk about what Unilever has learned from Ben & Jerry's, and we should explain what Unilever is. It's not a household name here, but it's in everyone's household.
Exactly. So Unilever is one of those dreaded multinationals that has, over this last 10 years, really transformed themselves into a leader, and it ranks number one on the Dow Sustainability Index and all other sort of global rankings, under the leadership of Paul Polman, who really bought, you know, the sort of sustainability logic to Unilever and put it at the core. And it really started with looking at sourcing practices, looking at carbon footprint, and then moved on to looking at impact on communities and social fiber of communities. And I think that's where the Ben & Jerry's first nudge of influence came is, well, climate change is the biggest challenge we're facing as mankind right now, but its immediate impact are on the people on the bottom of the rank list. You know, the wealthy can move on, can move to different places, the poor cannot. And how that impacts the social fiber and the justice component of climate change is what part of what we brought to COP21 and what we brought to the Unilever Sustainable Living Plan. Unilever has brands like Dove, Lipton, Suave, all the way through to Hellmann's and small brands like Sir Kensington and you know, bigger brands like Knorr. So it's a giant business operating right around the world, $60 billion euro turnover and 170,000 employees. So when you create change at that scale, the impact is enormous. But I think the biggest thing that Ben & Jerry's has done and helped Unilever, convince Unilever and other businesses is that, yeah, when you take a stand, when you stand up for Black Lives Matter, you get a pushback. You do. But your core fan base, the people that really buy into the values of your brand, really connect. And bringing that, what they call purpose, we just call it social mission, bringing that voice and engaging your community and your fans in that mission is, you know, where we're taking Unilever, and we're saying, look, yes, we want to have purpose-led brands, brands that stand for something and that take action in their communities. They won't all be like activist brands like Ben & Jerry's, but they want to do good.
So perhaps as a testament to the real commitment that Ben & Jerry's has had, this has at times led you to be in conflict with Unilever. The one instance that comes to mind is Ben & Jerry's stand on GMOs, and perhaps you can tell us some other times. And what is this like to be within, you know, have a parent company with whom you are publicly disagreeing?
Yeah, that was interesting. No, we have a... You know, I think there's two big things. One is Ben & Jerry's has a very strong governance model. So we have a strong independent board of directors that really charts out the policies of the social mission. And they have legal governance over that part of our company. So their word really sticks there. And having that creates a very civil discourse within Unilever, which anyway is a very civil company in terms of how we interact among senior leaders. So whilst we had to navigate complex agricultural consumer issues like non-GMO, we did that in a very professional way. I would say I had very little sort of a super negative internal experiences around this. Clearly there were pressures, clearly there were people at very opposing opinions to us inside the company. And, you know, as a CEO, I said, it's my job to implement the policies of my board. And I will implement them with vigor. So I think, you know, that's it's a really important, never underestimate the power of strong and clear governance. The other part is, at the end of the day, non-GMO and the sort of toxicity of our agricultural system has really risen on consumers' minds. And whilst, you know, the sort of, there is no clear health benefits one way or the other, the general feeling of wanting to reduce chemical use in our agriculture is really rising. And, you know, this gave Unilever the opportunity to really learn a lot about our point of view and respond to that with a whole series of new products.
I mentioned in the intro the Milk with Dignity campaign, the agreement that you reached with Migrant Justice, the group that represents migrant workers on dairy farms here in Vermont. This has been a long and bruising battle that has been waged in public, in protests. And at the end of it, you and the leaders of Migrant Justice appeared on Church Street in front of the Scoop Shop to hail this agreement. So tell us a little bit about what Milk with Dignity does, but also about the kind of the backstory and how this came to be and why it took as long as it did and what it was like to be on the sharp end of these protests.
Yeah, this is for people who don't run values-led, mission-led companies. They really wonder, why are they protesting you? You know, that must be terrible. Change is hard, particularly changes that bring other constituents into governing and having power and voice. And putting together this program, which is, I think, the thing I'm the most proud of, I think it's the thing I'm the most proud that our farmers have embraced and have implemented. And I'm proud of what Migrant Justice as an organization, how they grew, how they developed, how they created during this period this program and staffed it and trained and rolled it out. And the reason that it took so long from our side was two things. One, we had to learn a lot. We had to learn a lot as a white CEO walking into a room and thinking you can lay out the plan. That's only half the story. There's a huge other half story about perspectives, emotions, respect, hearing. And so we had to go through a learning journey. That was sort of the first phase. The second phase is more technical. Like, we had to create a program that I could look, sit at the kitchen tables of every Vermont farmer and say, this is gonna work. This is gonna be good for you. It's gonna be good for your worker. It's gonna be good for your family. And I wasn't about to pass something to them that I couldn't wholeheartedly stand behind. That was the second delay. You know, Migrant Justice is an organization that could bring voice to this. So part of this was to put pressure on us. But frankly speaking, we were working day in and day out on this with them. The other part was, this is a great opportunity to highlight the challenges and the issues. And as we use exactly the same technique ourselves to highlight the issues of this country, it's hard to be angry about people protesting and highlighting the plight of migrant farm workers in America, which we are wholeheartedly in support of. So I did not have any major emotional challenges with that. I can now, it's always good when you have a success story at the end, you can look back and say, we finished and signed that agreement, we prepared the rollout, and we had 100% cover immediately. It took 11 years to get the tomato industry over. It took 3 months to get Vermont dairy farmers on board. So that says a lot about the work that was done with Migrant Justice. It says a lot about Vermont dairy farmers who did not maybe have as much perspective and the same perspective as I do about highlighting challenges. They felt, you know, this was personal. Many of the people that work on their farms, they consider like family. So this was a big emotional hurdle. But to go from, you know, signing an agreement, creating the implementation team, and getting to 100% of our volume covered by Milk with Dignity, that says that that whole process was worth it.
So under the Milk with Dignity program, the workers at the dairy farms that supply Ben and Jerry's will have the right to one day off a week. They'll earn at least the state minimum wage. They'll be guaranteed at least 8 consecutive hours of rest between shifts, and housing accommodations that include a bed and access to electricity and clean running water. So people may hear that and say, that's pretty basic. What were the conditions that some workers were working in that you were, that gave rise to this campaign?
I mean, obviously, as you can understand from the 100% adoption, the conditions were not already. There was not a huge gap in the sort of physical conditions. There were outliers, and there are still many outliers. But this program is not a gotcha program. This is a program designed to work with the farmers who many are earning less than that, who are earning less than that today and are putting in more hours today.
The farmers themselves.
The farmers themselves. I mean, you know, the dairy industry in Vermont and across the nation is really struggling. Whilst the fat, the component, the cream that Ben & Jerry buys is relatively valuable, the non-fat components are very, very cheap. They impact the global markets, etc. So we are losing farms nearly on a daily rate. We have farmers that are truly struggling and are putting in incredible hours to make their farms work financially.
And just to underscore that point about the struggles faced by dairy farmers, and I should also reintroduce you here. You're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and we're talking with Jostein Solheim, who has been the CEO of Ben & Jerry's since 2010 and has just stepped down to become the take a executive position with Unilever. Agrimark, the dairy cooperative throughout New York State, I think it was giving information to its dairy farmers about suicide and where to call for suicide prevention information. So really desperate times on some of these dairy farms.
It really is. And we have the same program, and it's the front page of our Caring Dairy program, sadly. Vermont dairy farmers are some of the most upright and hardworking and honest people you can meet anywhere. I'm incredibly proud of this community and how they face into the current economic challenges. I think the big flip with the Milk with Dignity program is to the recognition that the workers are there with them. You know, no farm, no work. So this is not a program designed to make it harder. It's a program actually designed to make it better. And the biggest benefit, in my view, is around human dignity. It's about having a voice. It's about getting help to explain what you need. And many of the things you need cost nothing. Some of them do. And we have to then lean into a program and a structured way to make those investments where needed. But we're all in it together.
At the announcement just last year of the implementation, the agreement on Milk with Dignity, you were quoted saying, we really believe this is going to travel across the nation. What have you seen as far as it being the impact this has had?
What we're seeing is a lot of attention in and around workers and worker conditions. Actually, in the dairy industry and beyond. What we need to do now is to really operationalize this. You know, we've gone extremely fast there, you know, from going from, you know, nearly nothing to a full program implemented on farms with hundreds of workers in the program. I think a lot of companies are struggling with seeing what the return on investment is, because there is a significant cost involved with programs like this for manufacturers. Rightly so, we have to carry the burden of programs like this. We are benefiting from the hard work of these farmers. So how people can tell these stories and how consumers can buy products that are made with a supply chain that respects the human rights and respects all the workers in that supply chain, you know, that's the ultimate goal. We had a lot of interest. We had a lot of companies that source out of upstate New York, etc., are all looking at this program. We haven't signed anyone up yet, but that's not unusual, and because of, you know, you want to see, does this really work? So I'm optimistic that this will give voice to workers across the nation.
You have talked about caring capitalism, that's a value that guides you. What is that?
You know, the enterprise and companies are really the only mechanism that we have for creating prosperity. governments can then redistribute that and ensure that we can create an equitable society with it. But how the core engine of our economy can work so that it really brings in all the key stakeholders is what, you know, caring capitalism, conscious capitalism, benefit corporations, is really all centered around recognizing that businesses have a responsibility in their communities and in society, that businesses have a responsibility for what we in economics call the externalities. So I can use your water, I can burn carbon to create a product, but if it has no cost, then I will just keep going. And then we're depleting the natural resources of Mother Earth. And we have to take responsibility for our full supply chains, not just our own little factories. We have to look back to the farm. So I think this is where the revolution can come, when people can actually vote with their dollars and buy products that do good. Now, it can sound like that's not feasible. It's a paradox, you know. So Ben & Jerry's owned by a big company, so we don't have to make any money. Not true. This is a very financially responsible and successful company. We're actually one of the most financially successful companies, because our people also do an incredible job. You know, we have two manufacturing units here in Vermont. We've just invested many, many, many millions of dollars in those manufacturing units. We've created 75 new jobs. And you know, that's success. That's putting it also back in the community, new jobs, new infrastructure, more dairy supply. And it just shows that model can work financially, it can work for the communities, and it can work for the consumers. I mean, we don't call them consumers, we call them fans, because we have a responsibility towards them and they demand that responsibility. So you can really do this. And you know, my mission is to bring that to the mainstream. My mission of going to run this division for Unilever is to bring the Ben & Jerry's spirit and philosophy alive in the mainstream of business.
So as you move on to this larger role within Unilever, which of the things do you feel are you're going to be most able to quickly implement in other brands?
That's an excellent question. I'm sure my new teams will be listening very intently to the answer. I'm really focusing on what I call the upstream and the downstream. So upstream, you know, how regenerative can our agricultural policies become? How much can we heal the earth with what we do in our agricultural streams? How can we work with farmers to put carbon back in the ground? And then downstream is all about redistributive. It's about what is our impact on society? Who gets what out of it? And how do we support those in need with our business? Now, so bringing purpose, and the sort of definition of a purpose-led brand, to Unilever and accelerating that, making it real. You know, my deep philosophy is, if we know which direction we're going in, let's walk in that direction while we keep talking and looking for fine-tuning solutions. The other part that is, you know, changing our world is digital, the digitalization of everything. You know, our biggest digital campaign to date is COP21. It was getting a binding climate agreement in Paris. And people go like, well, that's digital. I thought it was Amazon, you know, selling stuff online. That's also digital. But digitalization of everything and how you build that into your business model and how that allows you to connect with human beings on multiple levels is really, really powerful. It also allows you to run your business very, very well. So those are probably the two areas. How do we build this into our brands and really take action? And then how do we digitalize, because the market is digitalizing, and how do we use that as a power for good?
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're talking with Jostein Solheim. He is has been the CEO of Ben & Jerry's for the last 8 years and is now leaving to become head of food and beverage in North America for Unilever. We're going to take a short break for the news, and we'll be back with more with Jostein Solheim. Stay tuned. The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman is brought to you by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and by Stowe Cider, Green Mountain Power, Concept 2, Let's Grow Kids, The Alchemist Brewery, and by UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. We're spending the hour this week with Jostein Solheim. He has been the CEO of Ben & Jerry's since 2010, and he is now stepping down to take on a larger role within Unilever in North America. Jostein, as a pioneer in the world of socially responsible business, what are the roots of this? And I know one of them is that you have talked about having attended United World College. So explain what that is and how that influenced you.
Well, that was, you know, I was born and raised in Norway, which is an incredibly equitable society where, you know, men, women, and incomes are not determinants of your status as a human being. So I came from that background and had this enormous opportunity to go to one of the United World Colleges in Canada on the West Coast. It's Lester B. Pearson College, where we brought people from 55 different nations together in the spirit of developing future leaders for peace. I mean, this was a college that was founded by Lord Mountbatten after the Second World War, where in his sort of frustration of, if people just knew each other, if people could just understand each other, we wouldn't have these wars. And it was a pivotal moment in my life, obviously, coming together all these nations, all these talented people, people from refugee camps, people from Israel, people from Palestine, you know, these global conflicts were alive and living on our campus. And as part of that education, you did a community service and a social service. And probably that pivoted me into a lot of these issues. I had the opportunity to work as a social worker in a maximum security prison, a youth maximum security prison. The idea was to bring in, you know, highly educated young people to be role models. You know, the gap was like the Grand Canyon. I mean, that was a flawed strategy. But learning about the challenges and the injustices that these young people who had ended up in this maximum security prison had faced, now also they had some flaws, they had some mental health issues, they had a whole host of things going on. But it was nothing but linear and nothing but clear cut. And that for me was probably one of those huge influences that set me on a different trajectory and a different way of thinking about the world. It also made me a nomad, which is, you know, why we're kept moving around the world and worked and operated in so many different countries and within so many different cultures, because it's just natural and fascinating for me.
What was the winding path that led you to Vermont in 2010?
Yeah, this is, particularly at MBA programs, people get very disappointed when they discover that there isn't like a grand plan of life that you can set a target and then you arrive there. Like all good things in life, it's sort of a, you happen to be there when it happens. and then people go like, no, I want to make a plan. You know, I always take on challenges and opportunities where I think I can, A, have an impact and change something and positively impact people's lives, and B, do something that I'm really going to enjoy. You know, I think there's a lot of, I'm sure, great jobs. They're just not great jobs for me. So I happen to have come to the U.S. actually to do a major change program for the mainstream business. And I can still remember my interview with the board. They said, "What? So you laid off hundreds of people, and now you want to work at Ben and Jerry's?" And of course, yes. And we created, a rejuvenated business that actually created more jobs and in the right places and could really fit the future. And Ben and Jerry's, as I said in the beginning, you know, I was a little skeptical at first because I really didn't know whether this was true. Could this you know, relatively small company in Vermont really punch that hard? And thankfully, I was proven wrong, and we have. And for me, this was really like coming home. It was coming into a set of values and approach to business that was entirely natural for me. Entrepreneurial, very empowering for our teams because we work around a core set of values that are really, really clear. It's got a little drop of that founder logic, which is let's just do it, you know, and very action and execution oriented. So I right away felt at home.
You've been writing and speaking about things that are not normally associated with CEOs. So let's go through a few of your recent things. You wrote an article recently entitled "A Mostly Vanilla Ice Cream Company's Learning Journey About Race." What'd you learn?
You know, the most humbling journey I've had is around race. Because as a white CEO, you have to train every day to keep seeing the daily injustices around you because you get lulled into this normalcy of life. And for me, it was like somebody pulled a veil, a curtain away on the world, and you see it through a different lens. And it's humbling as a white male to discover the level of privilege that you have in society from dumb things like walking through an airport. If you walk through an airport and you see the level of profiling, if you see the questioning of women in the first class line, you know, if you're a woman of color, I mean, you're gonna have to have your first class ticket printed on your forehead not to be, asked to leave the line when you go through security, all the way through to being pulled over by the police. It brings a whole new perspective and understanding of what it just means to be a person of color every day. And so that for me has been an incredible journey, bringing that into action and having an impact on that. It's one thing to write great statements. It's another thing to find partners and ways that we can truly impact that. And then that's been the journey that we've been on. We can do big things and small things, and mostly here, this is a grassroots movement. I was extremely thrilled this summer to open up the Smithsonian exhibit at Waterbury, where you in a very easy way can access and understand the original Poor People's Campaign that was initiated by Martin Luther King, visiting a mostly white ice cream company in Vermont. That's maybe not what you expect to see, but being Vermont's biggest tourist attraction, this was such a great opportunity. Working with the Poor People's Campaign, just playing our role in that campaign, not leading it, not profiting from it, just supporting it with events, with ice cream, with financially, has allowed us to be part of that movement. And
what made you choose this issue, the issue of race, which, as you say, in a vanilla white company? And I know that Ben and Jerry's staff traveled to North Carolina, where Reverend William Barber, the head of the Poor People's Campaign, is based, to listen and learn. Why this issue?
What we found was there are two defining issues that face us now that you can't walk away from. One is climate justice. We share one earth, one world, and we have to hand that over to the next generation in a usable way. And we're failing at the moment, so we need to really step up. And that's intimately interlinked with racial justice or equity. Because as the world gets under more pressure, we have more migration. Look at Europe, where we have an enormous refugee crisis that we're actively involved in Europe. In America, it's a racial divide, Hispanic, African-American, white. And unless you can come through the lens of race, you can't get at good communities and solid and growth. So you could try to skirt around it, but at the end of the day, there is a racial dimension, there's a structural and systemic racial dimension that you need to break through to get to the solutions. So that was our realization. And then you could say, as a vanilla company, stick to vanilla. But no, that's not our style. Our style is let's go into it. We talked earlier about migrant justice. We learned a lot from that process. We learned a lot about giving voice, dignity, respect, about hearing other people's perspective, about understanding the incredible job that these workers do every day, and that I would have no chance of even doing 1 week as a milker on a dairy farm in Vermont. I think 2 days and I'd be looking for medical leave.
You wrote an article last year, and once again, you're listening to the Vermont Conversation, and our guest this week is Jostein Solheim, the CEO of Ben & Jerry's. Up until this summer, he is now moving on to a larger role within Unilever, the parent company. Jostein, you wrote an article last year entitled, "Our Business Leaders Can Change Our Democracy." How can business leaders do that, or why should they do that?
Yeah, I probably want to give one qualifying element there. I believe companies led by business leaders can change our democracy. In an increasingly polarizing world where we politicize the most basic human rights and the most basic gender race issues, companies are finding it increasingly hard to stay neutral and say nothing and do nothing. Your employees expect you to have a point of view as a company for what's right in the world. And your customers are sort of increasingly expecting you to have a point of view. It creates a challenge for companies to navigate this. And I always say then with a big smile, welcome to my world. But as the main economic engines of our economy, companies have a responsibility, and creating real civil engagement, real civil society engagement, creating and stimulating an environment where people are looking for solutions that yes will benefit their businesses, because we all depend on strong communities and consumers that thrive, to sell our products. So there is a self-interest, but there's also a community interest. And the idea that you don't have a point of view anymore is sort of dying. I think the key thing that I'm looking for, and I'm telling all my colleagues who ask me for advice, is don't go it alone. We have some CEOs now that are sort of tweeting out on Sundays, their new policies. That does not create engagement and actually often does not create impact. What creates impact is gather your troops on Monday, cascade into your organization, get your people with you, and then as a unit, take action. Because that's when you can truly impact something. So let's move away from Twitter. Let's get embedded into our companies and let's take direct action.
You did that earlier this year. You joined 5 Vermont CEOs to write an open letter to Vermont Governor Phil Scott, urging him to support studies for clean water and decarbonization. And the letter began, "We, as leaders of companies that employ more than 800 Vermonters and account for over $1 billion in sales each year, are concerned by your refusal to seek new information and analysis to address the threats facing our state." And it was signed by you, by the CEOs of Seventh Generation, The Alchemist, Danforth Pewter, and Black River Produce. What made you decide to get involved in local politics?
Well, we don't think that the survival of the planet is a political issue. We think it's an issue that requires leadership across the board. You know, we are firm believers that there is a significant and important role for government to create level playing fields and incentive systems that incentivize the right business solutions to the right problems. Unless we put a price on carbon, unless there is a value in reducing your carbon footprint, we're not going to create real change. We have to use a business tool, i.e. financial incentives, to create the change we want to see. Vermont has this incredible entrepreneurial spirit from the entrepreneurial dairy farmers that are making a living in a challenging time through to, you know, great microbrewery industry. Lots of amazing companies come out of this state. This state has an incredible opportunity to differentiate itself and become a magnet for other companies and jobs by creating an infrastructure that is truly forward-looking. And, you know, the plans that we supported and brought forward would not only address the reduction of carbon and potentially the use of, you know, the water issues that we're facing with Lake Champlain, it would also redistribute that income to build our rural infrastructure. So really a win-win solution. But as a business leader and as a company that has Vermont on its packaging, you know, this the health of this state is, you know, pretty much core to our mission.
You've spent 8 years at this job here in Vermont. What are you proudest of that you've accomplished and that that you hope will live on?
Well, that is a very challenging question. I think, you know, what I get the most joy out of, the most energy out of, is when I see our team members in small actions, in big actions, in behind the scenes or in the front line, do things that, A, I've never seen, I had nothing to do with it, but they know what we're up to, they know our mission, they know our values, and they execute it brilliantly. That's what's kept me going for 8 years, is I go, wow, look at that. Like, isn't that awesome?
Like what?
It's from like silly little popular culture things, like my favorite one was when Colorado legalized marijuana. I was, you know, in a meeting, you know, we had a kickoff meeting somewhere out of the country, and they tweeted out, you know, we're out of stocks in Colorado. What's up with that? And this tweet became a national phenomenon, and all my, you know, colleagues were saying, like, yes, and how did you approve that so quickly? And when I was, I had nothing to do with it. And those are like, just, you know, I'm just using them as small examples. When Hurricane Irene hit us, you know, the part of the state where I live was not that affected. I was not paying much attention to the news. I was sort of busy keeping, you know, everything still safe and sound in my community. I show up to work, the office is half empty. And I'm going, what's going on? He goes, didn't you hear? Waterbury is underwater. And I had to basically cancel all my meetings that day to catch up with my staff, where 50 people were already on site with tools ready to go into our community to help and support people who are really devastated by the storm. Again, it's one of those things. You say, Justin, you really rallied your troops really quickly there. I said, no, I ran like hell to catch up.
I happen to know that you were, I believe it was you, a friend of mine tells the story, a friend whose house was flooded in Waterbury, of having a bunch of guys show up and they were tearing up floorboards, and he got to talking with them and asked one of them, who told him that he worked for Ben & Jerry's, what does he do? And it was apparently you, and you said, well, I'm the CEO.
Yeah, that's true. There's poor people found their freezer about two blocks down the street that they lifted up on their patio. We tore up beautiful floorings and walls. I'm not that handy, so the reason probably they discovered that was because I got a bit of a whiplash as I ripped up a board. But yeah, no, you got to get in there and do the work. What better things could I do? I mean, I had one call with the global head of the Fair Trade Organization that day, and I did that from their house.
So on the belief that we learn more from our mistakes than our victories, what are some mistakes you've made and what'd you learn?
Ooh, well, oh, that's a lot. That's a good question. We are very proud of our mistakes. You know, we usually, you know, we have our flavor graveyard. And so there are many products that we thought were just really awesome ideas that were either well ahead of their time or nobody else liked them. So we have our sort of a fair grouping of, you know, nice product flops that, that you learn from. I think, though, more sort of fundamentally for me, entering into new markets, you know, we've gone into Japan again, getting that cultural context and understanding truly a different culture and how we can be who we are but still serve them and their community. There, you know, you can really go back and you can go like, oh, we could have done that better, or we didn't know that then. Having said that, we've had some rip-roaring successes in places like Australia, you know, where we went in and there was no support for things like same-sex marriage. And we were highly advised not to get involved, and we said, well, sorry, but this is something we stand for. And so we went, started a campaign, and actually just a few years later, you know, same-sex marriage was legalized in Australia. So there's a willingness here to take risk and to find and do make mistakes. Most of our mistakes we can correct really quickly. So, you know, we can know whether a campaign is working or not working very, very quickly in a digitalized world. So we're able to adjust. But on a personal level, you know, I think I've learned that there are certain people and certain leaders that are open for change. And there are certain people that are not. And I'm going to focus my time on the people that are open for change. I did spend time on the others and trying to get the mainstream and some other forums, you know, to really embrace this. And the gap's too big. So let's get the people who are open for change, and then let's open up the next people for change, and then we'll move them along. That's probably one of my key learnings.
What is your advice to young people who are interested in making a difference in the world in whatever it is they do? Maybe it's business, maybe it's other things. What do you have to say to them?
Don't overcomplicate it. You know, I think that in all facets of life, you can have a truly positive impact. And one of my biggest learnings as a CEO of this company has been show up. You know, if you show up, you've already taken a giant step towards having an impact. And the amount of times that I've sort of nearly felt embarrassed that I'm at a march and we get called out, and it really energizes people to fight on. And I'm thinking to myself, all I did was show up. So first of all, show up. Secondly, I think if you're going into the world of business entrepreneurship, always do something that you're passionate about and that you truly believe in. And that sounds like a generic sort of statement. But if you survey people in their jobs, there's an awful lot of people who are just working for an income and who are not connected with their jobs. And again, you can have enormous impact in any company if you just start looking for the small steps that will then lead to bigger things. So I have most people spend a lot of time thinking about the big picture and how they're going to have this strategy to change the whole world. And sadly, changing the world is going to be many small steps. So I just encourage everybody, just take a step.
Well, Yostein Solheim, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation, and good luck in your new venture as head of food and beverage and all, for all of North America for Unilever.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yostein Solheim has been the CEO of Ben & Jerry's since 2010. That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. You can hear this and all shows at vermontconversation.com. And come back next Wednesday at 1 for another Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Thanks for listening. The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, this special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, is underwritten in part by Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce farmers can't sell. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, community, and economy. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. The Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And by Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C., as well as nearly 700 business members of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit.